story read by Aidan. Patrick, and I'm using his real name to protect his identity, was an easy choice as a spiritual guide, so I chose him. Easy for two reasons. Firstly, because he always pronounced my name carefully, as if it was something sacred. That made me feel special and strangely blessed. And secondly, with his long white hair and bushy white beard, he actually looked like God, albeit a cliched, cartoon-like version. I met him in a church, ironically. A small, back-of-the-way, non-denominational church in East London, with a sparse but determined congregation of broken souls, carefully patching themselves back together again with kindness and hope. The service would be typically loose and ad hoc, with plenty of improvised participation from the floor. Patrick, for instance, might stand as if rising in ecstasy, but then shuffle almost comically to the front of the church, announcing himself as he went, as if we didn't already know him. Then, straightening his back proudly and planting his feet firmly, he would confess, speaking in his seductive Wexford accent. Patrick had been born in Wexford, he would like to remind us, Wexford of which Saint Aidan is the patron saint. Hence, perhaps, the almost sacred tone he would adopt when pronouncing my name. Not that Lindisfarne Aidan, though he was Irish too, he would remind me, wagging his finger sagely. In front of his friends, radiant, in his miraculously clean white trainers, black jogging bottoms, baggy at the knees, tucked into Father Christmas socks, colourful tie around his waist from which a pair of scarlet underpants would peak, a white Nirvana t-shirt, completing the ensemble, topped, of course, by that mop of snow-white hair. Patrick always wore the same clothes, so either he had 364 and a quarter Nirvana t-shirts and 728 and a half seasonal socks, or else he washed his clothes every night in the sink and dried them on the radiator, for he was always scrupulously clean. His trainers, as I mentioned, miraculously so. And he always smelled of Wright's coal tar soap, because that was the kind of chap he was. Tinged, admittedly, with more than a hint of tobacco. But I digress. There he would stand, Patrick, and confess. Each week he would reveal something new, some sin, transgression, or a crime, even, that he had committed either recently or, more often than not, many years ago. Patrick had done a lot of bad things, for which he'd say he was sorry. Hallelujah! A voice would cry from the wilderness of underpopulated seats. Not my voice, though I was often tempted out of naughtiness. But the one thing he was most sorry for, he would confide to me privately, was getting caught. Every fucking time. And, he would add, pleading guilty like a fucking idiot. The last emphasized with a sharp nod of self-reproach. Patrick had made a lot of mistakes and spent a great deal of time behind the door. The longest spell in Parkhurst. A notorious institution, he would warn. He must, I reasoned, have done something pretty serious to have ended up there, rubbing shoulders, as he told it, with such famously fiendish folk as Ronnie Cray and Peter Sutcliffe. And Oscar Wilde, I would tease him. The very same, he would reply seriously with a twinkle in his eye. How weird, I thought, it must have been for all those damned souls to have a vision of the Almighty drifting amongst them. A constant reminder of the afterlife. The only life they had to look forward to. Or not. And even then, even the prison cemetery was walled. The guards were taking no chances with them lot. Patrick, of course, might have looked very different then. A scraggy youth, probably, with scraggy hair, wearing a nylon shirt and polyester flares too short for him. Returning to his seat, unburdened, Patrick would sit next to me in the back row, or death row, as he called it, and with a sigh, pat my knee with a gesture like relief. Then, Patrick would take a battered sketchbook in landscape format from his bag for life, which held most of his material life, at least. The book contained what looked like poems. I never had occasion to read them. I would have loved to have read them, but I just knew that he didn't want me to, although I'm sure that he enjoyed the tease. The poems were all on the left-hand side and written with an elegant, flowing hand. Probably illegible to me, any road. Whilst the right-hand pages were filled with sketches resembling medieval charts, depicting waterways, mountains, and forests, populated by fantastical forest creatures. At these I would try to peek whilst feigning indifference, as he added to or embellished those already there. Later in his tiny studio flat, no washing in sight, clean, spare, and cell-like, Patrick would lounge in his comfy chair with an ashtray perched precariously on the wooden end of the armrest, whilst I would perch, just as improbably, on a three-legged milking stool at his feet, like a disciple, which I was. Sometimes I would bring my guitar and sing for him, some song or other that I had written or recently learned. The stool was good for that, and Patrick was a kind audience. Reluctantly, at his insistence, on occasion, I would confess my sins, admitting my character defects privately to him alone. I never stood up in church. My shit was trivial compared to his war stories. Nonetheless, he always listened quietly and patiently, continuing his quiet long after I'd exhausted my tale. God, he would say, is in the silence, too. Once, I admitted to him, not of stealing, but taking, as I called it, harbouring the truth, from a small charity where I used to volunteer. The charity had a small shop which generated a good portion of its modest income. I didn't work in the shop, but I took cigarettes from it. In lieu, I reasoned. That's just petty theft, Patrick said. I'm not sure which I resented most, the word petty or the word theft. I don't like to call it that. Of course you don't. Eventually, he smiled, cracked his knuckles, and stretched in his chair. Do you think they knew? I asked with a sudden realization. Probably. But they didn't say anything. Perhaps you were too valuable to them, Patrick suggested with a raised eyebrow. Your penance, he went on, is to say 10 Hail Marys and to make me a cup of tea. He chuckled. In the meantime, I'll steal one of your cigarettes. That's not stealing, I said, standing up and gesturing casually at the floor in front of his chair. You can have one, and you're welcome. May? I may have one, he corrected. I know I can, he said, refining my vocabulary once again. But I'd prefer to steal one. Patrick smiled and took not one, but two cigarettes from the packet at his feet where I'd left them. The last fucking two, I noticed with a pang of resentment. But I didn't say anything. I often wonder what that wise, gentle, funny man could have done to end up for so long amongst lifers at that most terrible place, Parkhurst. He never did elaborate, though he spoke candidly about a host of other crimes, and I didn't dare to ask him directly. I wanted to ask, but I just knew that he didn't want me to, although I'm sure that he enjoyed the tease. I suspect that he was convicted on that occasion for one crime that he didn't actually commit, and therefore, naturally for once, pleaded innocent. Patrick would have been a rough young Irishman living in England in the 1970s. Had he pleaded guilty, as I bet his brief advised him to, he probably would have served less time in a less forbidding place, amongst less harrowing company. Or am I just being... Paddy, by Aidan Slater, was an Aidan Studios Workshop production. Thank you for listening.